Our next speaker, she is a regular atheist correspondent for Alternet, and she authored Why Are You Atheists So Angry? 99 Things That Piss Off the Godless. Please welcome Greta Christina.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you very much for that nice introduction. I'm Greta Christina. I'm author of the book, Why Are You Atheists So Angry? 99 Things That Piss Off the Godless. And also, if you want to find me, I am blogging at the very cleverly named Greta Christina's blog. So, why are you atheists so angry? This is a question on a lot of people's minds these days. You know, in the last few years, the atheist movement has moved into overdrive. You know, we have become much more visible, much more vocal, much more activist, much better organized, and very importantly, much less apologetic. And this increased visibility is putting atheist anger into the spotlight. A lot of non-atheists are baffled and disconcerted, to say the least, at what they see as this sudden outpouring of atheist anger from apparently out of nowhere. Yeah, if only they knew. And you know, frankly, a lot of atheists ourselves aren't sure what to do with this anger, either with the atheist anger itself or with this perception of the atheist movement as a fundamentally angry one. And so today I want to talk about atheist anger. I want to talk about whether this perception of the so-called new atheist movement as a fundamentally angry one, whether that's even a valid perception. I want to talk about why many atheists are angry. I want to talk about whether or not this anger is valid, and I want to talk about whether or not this anger helps or hinders our movement. Okay, so first I need to point something out. Not all atheists are angry about religion. You know, most atheists I've known do have some anger about some of the specific ways that religion plays out in the world, but the atheist community and the atheist movement is very diverse, and we're diverse in, you know, all sorts of identity things, and we're diverse in our ideas. And one of the things we differ about most is how we feel about religion. You know, there's many atheists who would be perfectly happy to coexist with religion if religion were willing to coexist with us. You know, they just live and let live. Why can't we all just get along? If they leave us alone, we'll leave them alone. And there's other atheists who have a more, shall we say, confrontational approach to religion. You know, we think that there are qualities in the very nature of religion that make peaceful coexistence difficult or impossible, and we are actively involved in persuading people out of it. And in fact, one of the things that I find most interesting about this whole angry atheist image that the atheist movement currently has is that atheists commonly get seen as angry, bigoted, disrespectful, offensive, intolerant, and worse simply for existing. And simply for being open about who we are. I mean, look at what happens when the atheist billboards go up. Even the most sweet, inoffensive, you can be good without God, you know, don't believe in God, you are not alone billboards, when these go up, people go berserk. You know, if you read Hemant's blog, The Friendly Atheist blog, he keeps a log of, you know, all the atheist billboard campaigns and bus ad campaigns that he's familiar with and of reactions to them in the media. And the frequency with which people freak out about them, with which they vandalize them, they try to get them taken down, they sometimes succeed in getting taken them down, it's astonishing. So when you hear about all these angry atheists, it's really important to remember this. Yes. Absolutely, some atheists are angry about religion. Many atheists are angry about religion. You know, but this image that people have of the atheist movement is this raging mob with torches and pitchforks who, you know, just want to burn down all the houses of worship and personally dig up Jesus Christ so we can crucify him all over again. You know, it's really not warranted. It's really important to remember that atheists get pegged as angry and confrontational simply for existing. And for being open about who we are. And I also think it's really important to point this out. Those atheists among us who are angry about religion, it's not like we're angry all the time. You know, it's not like we're, you know, like, it's not like being an angry atheist means being in a constant state of rage. You know, I am definitely an angry atheist. You know, I literally wrote the book on atheist anger. And yet, most of the time, I'm a very happy person, and I live a pretty happy life. And to assume that I or Richard Dawkins or P.Z. Myers or any other famously angry atheist is angry all the time because our atheist writing, our angry atheist writing, is the writing that people are most familiar with. And it makes about as much sense as assuming that the only thing Roger Ebert ever does in his entire life is go to the movies. But there are things about religion that I'm angry about, and that other atheists are angry about. And I think this anger is valid. You know, a lot of people these days are asking, why are you atheists so angry? And a lot of these people seem to have never considered the possibility that a lot of atheists are angry because we have legitimate things to be angry about. So I want to talk a little bit about why specifically many atheists are angry. Or rather, because I don't actually presume to speak for all atheists, I want to talk about why I'm angry. And based on my experience in writing and speaking about this, a lot of my anger is anger that a lot of atheists share. I'm angry that, according to a recent Gallup poll, only 53% of Americans would vote for an atheist for president under any circumstances, even if they agreed with our positions 100%. And I'm angry that that number has actually gone up a little bit. A few years ago, it was only 49% or 45%. And when that number went up to 53%, the atheist community was delighted. Atheist organizations and atheist bloggers were like, we're so happy, we're just over 53% of people might vote for us for president, even if they agreed with us about everything. You know, I'm not angry at the atheist bloggers or the organizations for being excited about this. I am happy that we have to be grateful for those crumbs. I'm angry that it took until 1961 for atheists to be guaranteed the right to serve on juries, testify in courts, or hold public office in every state in this country. I was born in 1961. It wasn't that long ago. And my parents, who were non-believers, the year I was born, were not guaranteed the right to full citizenship in this country. I'm angry that atheists in the United States are frequently denied custody of their children explicitly on the basis of their atheism. And that's not 1961, that's now. I'm angry on behalf of the atheist blogger in Iran who told me that he has to blog anonymously because if he's discovered, he will be executed. I'm angry that school boards in this country are still, 80 plus years after the Scopes trial, still having to spend time and energy and resources to fight the battle to have evolution taught in the public schools. You know what? School boards are not exactly loaded with time and money and resources, and the time and money and resources that they're spending fighting this stupid fight is time and money and resources that they are not spending on teaching. And in a similar vein, I'm angry that science teachers in the public schools in the United States often don't teach evolution, or only give it a cursory mention, even when it's permitted and even required in the curriculum, because they're afraid of sparking controversy and they're afraid of having to deal with fundamentalist parents. Evolution is the foundation of the science of biology. Biology literally does not make sense without understanding evolution. And students who aren't being taught the theory of evolution are being deprived of one of the most fundamental ways that human beings have discovered of understanding ourselves and the world. I'm angry that people are dying of AIDS in Africa and South America because the Catholic Church convinced them that using condoms makes baby Jesus cry. I'm angry at preachers who tell women in their flock to submit to their husbands because it's the will of God, even when those husbands are beating them within an inch of their lives. I'm angry that the belief in karma and reincarnation gets used as a justification for the caste system in India. You know, I'm angry that people who are born into poverty and despair are taught that it's their fault, that they must have done something bad in a past life, and the misery that they were born into is their punishment. I'm angry that people in Africa are being terrorized, driven from their homes, tortured, maimed, and killed over accusations of witchcraft. Not in the Middle Ages, not in the 1600s, now, today, actual, literal witch hunts. I'm angry that so many parents and religious leaders terrorize children with horrific, vivid, traumatizing stories of eternal burning and torture to try to guarantee that they will be too terrified to even question religion. I'm angry that children get taught by religion to hate and fear their bodies and their sexuality. And I'm especially angry that girl children, female children, get taught by religion to hate and fear their femaleness, and that queer children get taught by religion to hate and fear their queerness. I'm angry that in fundamentalist Mormon polygamous cults, girls are raised from birth to believe that they will be tormented for eternity in the afterlife if they don't marry whatever man they are ordered to by their cult leader, by their preacher. In most cases when they're teenagers, in some cases when they're as young as 13, in some cases younger. And I'm angry that in the non-fundamentalist, non-polygamous, entirely mainstream Mormon church, girls are raised from birth to believe that they will be tormented in the afterlife if they don't marry, bear lots of children, and be submissive to their husbands. And that queer children are raised from birth to believe that they will be tormented for eternity in the afterlife if they don't suppress and deny their sexuality. And on a related topic, I am angry that in Salt Lake City, Utah, 40% of all homeless teenagers are gay. Most of them kids who have been kicked out of the house by their Mormon parents. I'm angry that in public, taxpayer-paid high schools around the country, atheist students who are trying to organize clubs, something that they are legally permitted to do, are routinely stonewalled by school administrators. Talk to Jesse Galef over at the Secular Student Alliance table if you want to know more about that. And I'm angry at what sometimes happens to high school kids who come out as atheists. I'm angry about the story Hemet told about Chelsea, who came out as an atheist and whose parents kicked her out of the house the day that she graduated. I'm angry about the girl from the Muslim family in the public, taxpayer-paid public school who was told, again, by her public school taxpayer-paid teacher in the United States in the classroom that the red stripes on Christmas candy canes represented Christ's blood, that she had to believe in and be saved by Jesus Christ or she'd be condemned to hell, and that if she didn't, there was no place for her in his classroom. I am angry. Okay, angry is not the word here. I am enraged. I am enraged at priests who rape children and tell them that it's God's will. And I am enraged at the Catholic Church that consciously, deliberately, repeatedly, as a matter of policy for decades, acted to protect these priests, acted to keep this a secret, stonewalled law enforcement, stonewalled investigations, moved priests from diocese to diocese. I am enraged that the Catholic Church deliberately, consciously, as a matter of policy, placed the reputation of the church as a higher priority than children not being raped. And I'm angry that the church, when they finally got caught on this and were being put in the courts, actually tried to argue in court that these policies of moving priests from diocese to diocese and protecting priests who had accusations of child rape against them, they actually tried to argue that this was a constitutionally protected form of free religious expression and that they should be protected from prosecution for it. I'm angry about 9/11. And I'm angry that after 9/11 happened, people of Middle Eastern descent were terrorized and their businesses and homes were vandalized because they were Muslim, or because people thought they were Muslim, even if they weren't, because they thought, oh, they have brown skin, they must be Muslim, and they blamed all Muslims for the attacks. And I'm angry that Jerry Falwell blamed 9/11 on, let's get this right, pagans, abortionists, feminists, gays and lesbians, the ACLU, and the People for the American Way. That pretty much includes all of us, right? You know, I mean, it's funny, but it's not. It would be funny if it wasn't horrible. It would be horrible if it wasn't so funny. But this theology of a wrathful God who's exacting revenge against pagans and abortionists by sending radical Islamic fundamentalists to fly an airplane into buildings full of secretaries and investment bankers, I'm angry that this was not a theology of some fringe wackadoodle, you know, with 100 followers picketing funerals. This was a mainstream theology held by a powerful, widely respected religious leader with millions of followers and a tremendous amount of political influence. And he thought that God was exacting revenge against pagans and abortionists by sending Islamic fundamentalist terrorists to blow up a building full of secretaries and investment bankers. I'm angry that the Bamiyan Buddha statues in Afghanistan, these magnificent monumental works of art over 1,500 years old, were dynamited by the Taliban because they were idols and they were considered to be an affront to God's law against idolatry. I'm angry that little girls are getting their clitorises cut off because their parents' religion teaches that that's what God wants. And I'm angry that so many people try to defend religion against the charge of female genital mutilation by saying, oh, well, but that's not what the religion really teaches, you know, if you look at the text. And like I give a crap. Like I give a crap what the text actually says. The reality is that the Islamic religion, as it is commonly practiced by many people, and also other religions as they're commonly practiced by many people, this practice is not limited to Islam. These religions, as they are actually practiced, teach that little girls have to have their clitorises cut off to make God happy. And I'm furious that people respond to this by defending the religion and not the children. And you know what? I'm also angry about male genital mutilation. I'm angry about male circumcision. I'm not as angry about it as I am about female genital mutilation, but I'm angry about it. I am angry that millions of boy babies are getting their genitals mutilated at birth for no good medical reason, because several thousand years ago, Iron Age goat herders said that that's what God wanted them to do. I'm angry about honor killings. I'm angry that in Islamic theocracies, women who have sex outside marriage, women who date outside their religion, women who spend time with male friends, women who disobey their male relatives, are executed. I'm angry that in Islamic theocracies, women who have been raped can be executed for the crime of adultery. I'm angry that the ones who only get beaten and imprisoned are the ones who get off lucky. I'm angry that in Islamic theocracies, girls as young as 9 years old can be married against their will. I'm angry that when a 9-year-old girl in Brazil was raped, the doctors who performed an abortion on her and the family that approved the abortion were excommunicated by the Catholic Church. And I'm angry that there was no excommunication for the man who raped her. I'm angry that in 13 states in the United States, childcare centers operated by religious organizations don't have to adhere to basic standards of health and safety and don't even have to be licensed. I'm angry that children in these child care centers have been harmed and have even died because of poor or non-existent staff training and grossly unsafe conditions, and the operators are immune from prosecution. And I'm angry that if an atheist organization or an atheist community wanted to set up a daycare center in any of those 13 states, you can be damn well sure they would demand that they be licensed and trained. You know, I'm angry that when atheist organizations and atheist communities try to set up and want to set up support systems, such as daycare centers and counseling and so on, when we try to set up support systems that replace the support systems that people get from religion and that people rely on from religion, so that people can leave religion if they want to, that when we try to set up these support systems, we get roadblocks put in our way, and that religious privilege lets religion get away with. No, I'm not saying those roadblocks shouldn't be there. You know what? I think, what do you know? Daycare centers and counselors should be trained and licensed. What a wacky concept. You know, I don't think you should be able to just hang up a shingle and do counseling. I don't think you should be able to just stick a babysitter in a basement and call it daycare. I don't think atheist organizations and communities should be able to do that, but I don't think religious organizations should be able to do it either. I'm angry that seriously ill children needlessly suffer and die because their parents believe in faith healing or believe that medical treatment will anger their God. And I'm angry that in 39 states in the United States, these parents are protected from prosecution from child neglect. If you neglect your child and don't give them medical treatment when they're obviously sick and obviously suffering, if you don't give your children medical treatment and they die, you're liable for prosecution for child neglect unless you do it for religious reasons, unless you do it because you think God told you. I'm angry that religion was used in the United States as a rationalization for slavery. I'm angry that slave owners in the United States were taught that God wanted them and thought it was okay to own other human beings as property. I'm angry that slaves in the United States were taught that God wanted them to be owned as property. I am angry at the religious leaders in the United States who perpetuated this rationalization, who made people feel okay about owning people as property. Slavery is one of the most appalling stains on this country's history, and I am furious at the role that religion played in perpetuating it. And I'm angry that people who know this history, people who are familiar with this history, still say that the foundation of culture and morality in the United States is the Bible. I'm angry that they look at this book that has clear prohibitions against eating shellfish, wearing blended fabrics, planting two kinds of crops in the same field, and a book that nowhere in it says, for fuck's sake, don't own other human beings as property, and in fact endorses the practice and tells you how to do it. And people look at this book and still say, well, yes, this book is the foundation of American morality and American culture. I'm angry about what happened to Galileo. Still. I realize it happened in 1633. I'm still mad. And I'm angry that it took the Catholic Church until 1992 to apologize for it. You know, it's like over 300 years later. Yes, sorry, we put you under house arrest for the rest of your life for saying, you know, that the earth revolved around the sun, even though we didn't say that. Sorry, 300 years later. I get angry when religious leaders opportunistically use religion and people's trust and faith in religion to cheat, to steal, to lie, to manipulate the political process, to take economic advantage of their followers, to take sexual advantage of their followers, and generally behave like the scum of the earth. I get angry when it happens over and over and over again. I get angry that when we see a headline saying, religious leader behaves like scum of earth, you know, lies, cheats, manipulates political process, takes sexual advantage of followers, that our reaction is, yeah, must be Tuesday. So what else is new? And I'm angry that this happens, and people still say that atheism is bad, because without religion, we would have no morality and would just do whatever we wanted to. I'm angry that when my father had his first stroke and went into a nursing home, the staff asked my brother, is he Baptist or Catholic? And I'm not just angry on behalf of my dad, who was an atheist, and I'm not just angry on behalf of my brother, who is an atheist. I'm angry on behalf of all the Jews, all the Buddhists, all the Muslims, all the Hindus who got asked that question. Heck, I'm angry on behalf of the Episcopalians and Methodists and Lutherists who got asked that question. That question is enormously insulting. It's enormously disrespectful, not just of my atheist dad, but of everybody who got asked that question in that nursing home who wasn't Baptist or Catholic. I get angry when believers say that the entire unimaginable hugeness of the universe was made entirely for the human race. When atheists, by contrast, say, you know what, the human race, infinitesimally small eye blink in the vastness of time and space, and yet somehow atheists are the ones who get called arrogant. I'm angry that I have to know more about their damn religion than they do. I get angry when believers treat any criticism of their religion, you know, any instance of just pointing out that, hey, you know what, your religion, it's a hypothesis about the world. It's a conclusion about how the world works, and we're asking you to stand up for itself in the marketplace of ideas. I get angry when any criticism of religion and any questioning of religion gets treated as insulting and bigoted. You know, I'm angry when believers accuse atheists of being intolerant for saying things like, I don't agree with you. I think you're mistaken about that. What evidence do you have to support that? And I get angry when believers respond to some or all of the offenses by saying, oh, well, but of course that's not the true faith. Yes, of course, that's terrible. Hating queers and rejecting science and stifling questions and dissent. Well, of course, that's terrible, but that's not the true faith. That's not true Christianity. That's not true Judaism. That's not true Islam. That's not true Hinduism. As if they knew, you know, as if they had the pipeline to God, as if they had any reason at all to think that they know for sure what God wants, and that they, among all the millions of other people who share their faith, are the ones who have gotten it right, and everybody else just obviously has it wrong. I'm angry that when I wrote the piece on my blog about atheists and anger, the piece that sparked this talk in my book, I got comments telling me, quote, "It's a pity your mother didn't have an abortion. I hope some guys bomb your house, bitch. Just kill yourself, Kay. What you need is to get laid, not with lesbian toys either. You need a strong man with some big junk and a strong will to set you straight. You're a fat, ugly whore. Your anger doesn't impress me. Go drink bleach." And I'm angry that writing my atheist opinions, you know, angry opinions granted, but, you know, opinions where I was careful to distinguish between criticizing behavior and insulting people. And in any case, opinions on a blog that people are free to read or not as they like. I'm really angry that doing this resulted in me fearing for my safety and my life. Of course, I'm also really angry that I now, as many death threats as I got from believers, I now get 10 times that many death threats from atheists because of my feminism. But that's another topic for a different rant. But perhaps most of all, I get angry. I get sputteringly, inarticulately, pulse-racingly angry when people ask why atheists are so angry. I get furious when people say, "Why do you have to be so angry all the time? All that anger is so off-putting. If atheism is so great, then why are so many of you so angry?" Because here's the other thing I'm angry about. All this anger I've talked about today, this barely scratches the surface. I could write an entire book about all the reasons. What am I saying? I did. I wrote an entire book about the reasons that I'm angry about religion. That book could have been an encyclopedia, and I would have still not been done. And I'm angry that all of this is true, and yet atheists' anger is assumed to be a sign not that there's something wrong with religion, but that there's something wrong with us. Okay. Now, many people are going to listen to this litany of grievances, and they'll even agree with all of it or most of it, and they'll still defend religion against it. They'll argue that these evils aren't religion's fault, that people do terrible things to each other for all kinds of reasons, and people come up with all sorts of rationalizations after the fact to defend it. And actually, you know what? They will have a point. You know, religion is far from the only motivation for human evil, and it's far from the only excuse that people give for it afterwards. But I would argue that religion is unique. And I would argue that the things that make religion unique are also what make it uniquely capable of causing terrible harm. We have to agree here on a definition of religion, and we could be here all day debating that point. For the purposes of this talk, I'm going to stick with a very pragmatic definition of religion based on how it most commonly plays out in the world. Religion is a belief in supernatural entities or forces that have an effect on the natural world. Religion is a belief in entities or forces that are invisible, inaudible, intangible, and otherwise undetectable by any human means, but that still exist and still have an effect. Now, we can debate whether that's really the best definition of religion, but for the purposes of this argument, that's how I'm defining it. You know, it might not be what religion means for a handful of, you know, modern theologians who have basically abstracted religion out of existence, but I think it's undeniable that for the overwhelming majority of people who practice religion, that's what religion means. And here's why it is so uniquely capable of causing harm. Religion is a belief in invisible beings, inaudible voices, intangible entities, undetectable forces, and events and judgments that happen after we die. It therefore has no reality check. And it is therefore uniquely armored against criticism, questioning, and self-correction. It's uniquely armored against anything that might stop it from spinning off into extreme absurdity, extreme denial of reality, and extreme grotesque immorality. nothing, any other ideology or philosophy or about or hypothesis about the world, it's eventually expected to pony up. You know, it's expected to prove itself true or correct itself and make itself more true or else fall by the wayside. But with religion, that is emphatically not the case, because religion is a belief in the invisible and the unknowable, and it's therefore never expected to prove that it's true. It's never expected to even show any good evidence for why it's true. Its capacity to do harm can spin into the stratosphere. And I want to make a comparison here to show my point. I want to compare religious belief with political ideology. And after all, religion is not, by very far, is absolutely not the only belief that's armored against criticism. It's not the only belief that leads people to ignore evidence in favor of their settled opinion. That's something we all do, atheists and believers alike. That's human nature. And contrary to the popular atheist saying, religion is not the only belief that inspires good people to do evil things. Political ideology can do that really, really nicely as well. You know, people committed horrors to perpetuate Stalinist communism, and that was an idea that many of these people sincerely believed was best. And horrors were committed under the last Bush administration in the name of democracy and freedom. But even the most stubborn political ideology will eventually crumble in the face of it, what's the word I'm looking for, not working. You know, eventually, you know, people can only be told for so long that under Stalinist communism, everyone will eat strawberries and cream, and that under an unrestricted free market, the rising tide will lift all boats. You know, a political ideology, it makes promises about this life, it makes promises about this world. And people will swallow it for a long time, but eventually, if the strawberries and the cream and the rising boats aren't forthcoming, eventually people notice. You know, I think actually the last couple of elections that we had in this country are evidence of that. People swallowed a line for a long time, but then people started noticing, you know what, this isn't working. People will rationalize a political ideology for a long time, but ultimately the proof is in the pudding. Religion is different. With religion, the proof is emphatically not in the pudding. With religion, there is no pudding. With religion, the proof comes from invisible beings and inaudible voices. With religion, the proof comes from preachers and prophets who supposedly hear these inaudible voices and are perfectly happy to tell us what they think and what they say. The proof comes from religious texts, again, written hundreds or thousands of years ago by prophets who supposedly heard the voice of God and was happy to pass it on to the rest of us. The proof comes from feelings in people's hearts, you know, I just feel it in my heart. I'm sure we've all heard that. You know, feelings in hearts, people's hearts that very conveniently tell them what they already believe or what they most want to believe. And the proof comes in the afterlife, after people are dead and gone and they can't come back to tell us about it. So with religion, even if God's rules and promises aren't working out, followers still follow them because the ultimate judge and judgment are invisible. There is no pudding, there is no proof, and there's no expectation that there be any. And in fact, in many religions, the idea that there should be evidence, that's considered blasphemous. You know, the idea that you should ask for evidence for the things that you think might be true, that's considered you're questioning faith. You shouldn't ask questions. And in many religions, in fact, in most religions, believing things, having religious faith and believing things without evidence or contrary to the evidence, that's actually considered virtuous. That's what makes you a good person. So it drives me up a tree when people insist that religious bigotry and wars and violence and hatred and so on aren't really religion's fault. You know, no, of course not. It's the fault of religious leaders, you know, greedy, power-hungry, you know, selfish leaders who are manipulating the people. Or it's the fault of the people. You know, it's the fault of the people who are sheep and they're driven by fear and ego and tribalism and they don't understand the true meaning of God. You know, or else, you know, the wars and violence are and so on. They're really about something else. They're really about land. They're really about power. They're really about money. You know, they're not really about religion. I mean, of course, religious wars and conflicts are, of course, they're complex. And of course, lots of causes feed into them. But to deny the role that religion plays in religious conflicts, it is a textbook example of ignoring the elephant in the room. You know, it's like looking at an enormous steaming pile of elephant shit in the room and saying, goodness, where could that have come from? It can't have come from an elephant. It must have been brought here by a greedy, power-hungry elephant trainer. Or it must have been brought here by all those sheep-like, tribalistic elephant followers. You know, it's of course the elephant couldn't have come here from a religion, and it's really intolerant of you to suggest that it might. So when people say it's not fair to blame religion for the terrible things done in its name, I must passionately beg to differ. You know, when you look at this litany of religious harms that I've been ranting about today, what you'll find when you look closely at them is that every single one of them has at its core this basic nature of religion, what makes it different from other human activities. Its fundamental unverifiability and its lack of any reality check. I think it is entirely fair to blame religion for the terrible things done in its name. What makes religion unique is what makes religion screwed up. And I think our anger about it is entirely justified. But is it useful? Does anger about religion help or hurt our cause? I will acknowledge freely that anger is a difficult tool in a social change movement. It can even be a dangerous one. Anger can make people act rashly. It can make it hard to think clearly. It can make people treat potential allies as enemies. It can prevent us from having empathy and compassion. And in the worst case scenario, it can even lead to violence. And contrary to popular opinion, psychological research very clearly shows that expressing anger does not make us less angry. You know, there's kind of this myth about venting that, you know, if you express your anger and talk about, you'll let it out and you'll feel better and you'll be less angry. That's not true. Expressing anger makes us more angry. That's part of why I'm here today. You know, but seriously, I don't actually want to be cavalier about anger. I do think it's a difficult tool, and I do think it's one we need to be careful with. But even with that being said, yes, I do think that anger in a social change movement is not only valid, but valuable and necessary. Why? Because anger is always necessary. Because anger has been a major driving force between every major social change movement in history. Certainly all the ones that I'm aware of. The civil rights movement, the LGBT movement, the feminist movement, the labor movement, the environmental movement. All these movements have had as a major driving force a tremendous amount of anger. Anger over injustice, anger over terrible harm, anger over brutality. You know, we need to be very clear about this. Anger is not violence. Anger is not hatred. Anger is not bigotry. And when somebody says to you, oh, why are you, know, it's like, if you're talking about your anger and they say, why are you so hateful? Don't let them get away with that. Anger is not hatred. Anger is how we know that things are not okay. Anger is an emotion indicating displeasure and antagonism with how things are. Anger is how we know that people are being hurt unnecessarily. Anger is how we know that injustice is being done. Anger is how we know this, not just with our heads, but with our hearts. And anger is what motivates us to bloody well do something about it. I mean, why else would people bother to mobilize social change movements? You know what? Social change movements are hard. You know, they take time. They take work. There are things that I would rather be doing. You know, it's like I could be, you know, sitting on my sofa eating chocolate chips and watching Project Runway. You know, social change movements are they take work. They take time. Sometimes they take real risk. You know, people can lose their jobs, their homes, their families. They can even risk their safety and their lives. Nobody would bother if they weren't furious about something. You know, so when people tell atheists not to be so angry, they are asking us to disempower ourselves. They are asking us to lay down one of the single most powerful tools that we have at our disposal. They're asking us to lay down a tool that no social justice movement has ever been able to do without. They're telling us to be polite and diplomatic when history shows that polite diplomacy, and I'm not going to diss polite diplomacy is hugely important also in a social change movement, but it works much better when it's coupled with passionate anger. When people tell atheists not to be so angry, they're basically, this is a battle between David and Goliath, and they're telling David to put down his slingshot. And I don't know, just gnaw Goliath on the ankles or something? And in fact, when believers tell atheists not to be so angry or not to be so vocal about our anger, it's really hard to avoid the conclusion that this disempowerment is exactly the point. I don't know if any of you have noticed this, but the atheist movement is doing pretty well. Look around. How many people are here? How many people would have been here 10 years ago? We're doing really well, especially for a movement that's only become seriously mobilized in the last few years. We have made astonishing strides in a very short time, especially in the area of visibility and getting our issues on people's radar. We went from being on pretty much nobody's radar to being a major topic of conversation in news media, newspapers, TV shows, radio shows, and also just in people's homes, dining room table conversations and water cooler conversations. Many of our books are bestsellers. Our lobbyists have met with White House officials. We've even been openly acknowledged in positive ways by the President of the United States. And that, to my knowledge, has never happened in history. And very importantly, rates of religious belief are going up. Up, 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 all over the country and all over the world at an astonishing rate. I saw some polls recently that showed that not just in the entire United States as a whole, but in every single one of the 50 states, from New York to Texas and from Oregon to Alabama, the fastest growing religious affiliation is none. And that trend is especially true among young people. When you look, you know, when you see the demographics of who are atheists, you know, it goes up a little bit. You know, it's like, you know, older people, it's, you know, about 5%. You know, middle-aged people, it's about maybe, you know, 10%. And then with people who are 25 and under, it's going boom. It's like 25% and higher. And that is arguably the most important demographic for a social change movement. Clearly, we are doing something right. You know, clearly, our anger, among many other factors, of course, has been extremely effective, both at drawing attention to our movement and at motivating people in the movement and in the community to take action. And clearly, this has a lot of people seriously freaked out. Whenever believers give advice to atheists on how to run our movement, it's really difficult to avoid the observation that this advice is almost always in the direction of telling us to tone it down. You know, telling us to be a little less confrontational, a little less visible. I have just about never seen a believer advise the atheist movement to speak up more loudly and more passionately, to get in people's faces more about things that they don't want to think about, to not worry about offending people if we think we're right. I've been doing this for a few years now, and I've gotten a lot of advice from believers about how atheists should run the atheist movement. And it is almost always in the direction of politely suggesting that we shut up. Maybe I'm being cynical here. I don't think that's a coincidence. And again, when you look at the history of social change movements, you see the same pattern. It was true of the women's movement. It was true of the LGBT movement. It was true of the civil rights movement. It was true of the labor movement. Whenever a movement starts to get some real traction, when a movement starts to get some real visibility and real power, that's when opponents start fear-mongering about how angry they are. They start fear-mongering about the angry blacks, the angry women, the angry commies in the labor movement, the angry queers who are going to turn into this raging mob and tear up your city. Or else they start concern trolling, you know, about how, oh, anger just alienates people and you're not going to make any friends that way and, you know, you need to be sweet and diplomatic. You know, you're going to catch more flies with honey than vinegar. You know, I don't think it's a coincidence that we are being advised to lay down our anger, one of the most powerful tools there is for social change, right at the moment that we're starting to get some real power. And there's one more really important point that I want to make about all this atheist anger. Most of it is not about atheists. Some of it is, and that's entirely valid. There's real discrimination against atheists. There's real bigotry against atheists. And it's totally valid to be angry about that. But when you look at the things that make so many atheists angry about religion, what you see is that most of it is not about harm that's being done to atheists. Most of it is anger about harm that's being done to other believers. Our anger is, to a great extent, anger on other people's behalf. You know, atheists aren't angry because we're selfish or we're whiny or we don't have joy and meaning in our lives or we have a God-shaped hole in our hearts. You know. atheists are angry because we have compassion. Atheists are angry because we have a sense of justice. Atheists are angry because we see terrible harm being done to people, and our hearts go out for them, and we are powerfully motivated to stop it. Atheists are not angry because there's something wrong with us. Atheists are angry because there's something right with us. I'm running out of time here, so I want to leave you with a couple of quotes. Here's the first, and these are direct quotes. The supreme task is to organize and unite people so that their anger becomes a transforming force. And here's the second. I have learned through bitter experience the one supreme lesson to conserve my anger. And as heat conserved is transmitted into energy, even so our anger controlled can be transmitted into a power that can move the world. These quotes are not from Christopher Hitchens or Richard Dawkins or any other famously angry atheist. You know, they're not from Malcolm X or Betty Friedan or Abby Hoffman. The first is from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And the second is from Mahatma Gandhi. Leaders who today are held up as icons of peaceful, love thy neighbor activism. Leaders who at the time they were leading were not held up as icons of peaceful, love thy neighbor activism. Leaders who at the time they were leading were held up as examples of dangerous radicalism, threats to the stability of the society, and who only today, decades later, are used as these paragons of sweetness and good manners and are shoved in the face of activists, you know, who are being seen as too confrontational and too intemperate and too angry. So the next time somebody asks you, why are you atheists so angry? Remember that. Don't just remember Galileo. Don't just remember honor killings. Don't just remember the gay kids who were taught to fear their bodies and taught that they're going to burn in hell. Don't just remember the people who are cheated and stolen from by religious frauds. Don't just remember the kids who are raped by priests and the church that acted to cover it up. Remember the words of King and Gandhi. Remember that anger can become a transforming force. Remember that anger, controlled, can be transmitted into a power that can move the world. And remember that people who are trivializing our anger, however concerned, however well-meaning, are essentially trying to take that power away. Don't let them. Thank you.
Is there a mic? Where's the other mic? Oh, yeah.
So is everybody ready to march?
Hold on.
So is everybody ready to march?